Well, according to the writer, Evan Miller, the signs were there from the beginning for Howard Thurman. From the very moment that Thurman was born, he came into the world with what is referred to in the medical field as a call, C-A-U-L. I've never heard of that before. Maybe some of you that are in the medical field are familiar with it, but it means a membrane of the amniotic sac covered the face. That was a new one to me. Folklore held that in this rare occurrence, that it was both a blessing and a curse, granting the ability to foretell the future, but at the cost of living with a heavy heart and a deep burden. And Howard's grandmother, who had been born into slavery, was an experienced midwife. She acted quickly, piercing the baby's earlobes while removing the membrane. This was the only way it was thought in that day to break the curse. But alas, it was too late. And by the time that Thurman was old enough to inquire about the holes in his ears, he was already having remarkable visions. He'd see a face and know that something was about to happen to that person. He felt a deep connection to the natural world. While staring out at the ocean or taking long walks in the woods, he'd feel this overwhelming sensation as if gaining a deep understanding of the universe and that he was incapable of knowing on his own. There was something supernatural there about it. And it was here, surrounded by nature, that Thurman felt God's presence most deeply. He felt also these peculiar encounters with nature that graced his life. As a teenager, Thurman felt called to be a minister. But in Daytona Beach, where the family lived, there were no schools for African Americans beyond the seventh grade. The closest black school was in Jacksonville, which was about 100 miles away. And so, undeterred, Thurman applied and he was accepted. He would be able to live with a cousin, and by pressing clothes in a shop, he would be able to pay his tuition. And so, just at the young age of 13, Thurman said farewell to his family. A friend dropped him off at the train station. But as it turned out, Howard didn't have enough money to make the train fare. And so, overwhelmed, he sat down on the steps of the train station with his head bent, tears streaming down his cheeks. And just then he opened his eyes and he saw before him a large black man dressed in overalls with a denim cap. He recorded this story later in his autobiography. The man said, "Boy, what are you crying about?" The man said to Thurman, and he said, "Well, the problem is I'm trying to raise enough fare to go to school, and I come up short." "Well, if you're trying to get out of town to get an education," the stranger said, "the very least I can do is help you make the train fare. Come with me." And so the stranger paid the difference of the fare, and then without saying another word, he turned and he disappeared down the tracks. Thurman said he was always grateful for this mysterious benefactor, and there would be many other unexplained encounters in his life that would guide his path. He began to think that everyone was connected in one way or another, in some unseen fashion, like atoms bouncing off one another, setting up a series of chain reactions for good. Not all randomly, but because of some master blueprint. When I read his story, I was hooked on Howard Thurman, and I think you would be too. 20 years later, Thurman was an esteemed professor of religion at Howard University. One day he was hiking deep in the mountains. He often spent time in the woods and in nature. That's where he felt close to God. He was walking in an endless path among the trees when suddenly his mind was transfixed and his thoughts went out to a place he knew it was something beyond his own abilities to perceive. So shutting out everything around him until there was absolute stillness, these thoughts rushed into his consciousness, thoughts that were foreign to his own. And he saw in this illumined state a world that was no longer divided by borders of nations, no longer divided by money or power or race or religion, but rather he saw the world as one. All were God's children. And he knew at that moment that he could do no other. Thurman felt a deep call to social action, but he didn't know just what it meant or how he would begin. And so as God was directing his path, he didn't know it at a time, but a few months later, Thurman was invited to India on a pilgrimage where he would meet Mahatma Gandhi. And suddenly it all made sense. It set in plan his idea to start his own congregation. It was known as the Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples in nearby San Francisco, and I believe it's still going strong today. Maybe you've been there. It's a place where he felt people of all races would be welcome, and that seemed like a revolutionary thing in its day. He hoped it would spur a movement similar across the country. Unfortunately, he never attracted that large a following. At Howard University, his sermons drew hundreds of worshipers, and he must have been hoping for something similar at his new church. But in San Francisco, Thurman often preached to not more than 50 people. All of his life, he felt God leading him, and he wondered, so what am I to do? And in 1949, Thurman wrote a book entitled Jesus and the Disinherited, calling for all people to see beyond race. And it was one of the first texts on black liberation theology. Well, the book wasn't a very good seller, but among the few who took notice was a 20-year-old divinity student from Georgia who was inspired by Thurman's works. He would go on to lead a bus boycott protesting the arrest of Rosa Parks. He was a virtual unknown at the time, but the young student was inspired by Thurman's book. And he would go on to speak to overflow crowds about oppression, the need for freedom and justice and equality for all. That man, of course, was Martin Luther King Jr. And Thurman went on to become King's trusted advisor of the civil rights leader. In fact, King said he carried Thurman's book with him wherever he went. He was so impressed. Thurman said he was honored by all of this, but not really surprised. To his way of thinking, the connection between mysticism and social action was there from the very day that he was born. And he learned to listen for God's wisdom and voice above all the bustle and noise of this world to give direction for his life. He knew it was God's direction and words and not his own. Can you be both a mystic and a social activist at the same time? Can you hold a progressive activist theology and still be a contemplative? Can you be both heavenly minded and earthly good? Can we march for civil rights and affirm with Abraham Joshua Heschel that our legs are praying when we walk in protest? As we celebrate Black History Month, let us affirm the wisdom of one of the great spiritual mentors of our time and Howard Thurman. Thurman played a major part in the religious and social justice movements of the 20th century, influencing not only King, but Reverend Alfred Fisk, who was his co-pastor when he founded the Church of the Fellowship, and a whole host of others. Thurman talked a lot about light and joy, justice and community in the same breath. And like other influential American prophets, such as Thomas Merton, Thurman believed that true social change needed to be grounded on spiritual experience. And so where do we go from here in the 21st century? Both Martin Luther King Jr. and Thurman were contemplatives and activists whose faith motivated their prophetic actions. And how did they get there? For both King and Thurman, you had to look no further than the Gospels themselves, they said, because Jesus' path itself was both personal and prophetic, spiritual as well as social. And Jesus embodied a prophetic spirituality reflected in the welcome of the marginalized, the affirmation of women at a time where they were not welcome. He welcomed foreigners as well as the disinherited. These were radical words and actions in Jesus' day. In his first sermon, Jesus proclaimed, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." It's upon me, and this movement of the Spirit required the healing of the social order as well as people's spiritual and religious lives. And so the mysticism of Jesus and the prophets integrates social protest with the experiences of the holy. How could it be any other, they wondered. Thurman was an activist mystic, a universalist who experienced God profoundly throughout his life, through other people, as well as the non-human world of earth and sea and sky and animals. He believed that the world was animated by a spirit within which all of us lived and moved and had our being, and this spirit touched everyone. No one was immune. Thurman knew the dangers of polarization and racism, having grown up in a culture where he was an outsider in his own community. He knew the power of poverty and racism to destroy the imaginations and dreams of children and their parents. And Thurman also knew that God was present in everyone and that transformation can occur among the greatest as well as the least of these, the friends as well as the foe. And he believed that deep down everyone could be a mystic or a contemplative as well as a social activist. There could be no other way. So you wonder, what is a mystic anyway? And I like Richard Rohr's definition of a mystic, who says, "A mystic is someone who sees the whole and not just the parts." Someone who sees the whole and not just the parts. What an amazing accomplishment this is, a balancing act beyond most people's ability to see. And Thurman said, "The mystic understands that healthy societies are fundamental to spiritual wholeness. You must improve the social, political, economic order so as to open up the door for the time and the dignity for people necessary for intellectual, aesthetic, and spiritual growth," Thurman believed. "When persons do not have adequate food or housing, security or social equality, and legal protection, the marginalized often live with fear and trauma every day. We see daily, whether it be our borderlands where immigrants are being kept out, or the anxieties of persons fearing ICE raids, the marginalized who live with fear and trauma every day. I just saw on the news last night that the government is stepping up their efforts, sending in militia to help enforce the ICE raids in sanctuary cities. As a young seminarian, 35 years ago, I was very fortunate to attend Lakeview Presbyterian Church on the north side of Chicago, just down the street from Wrigley Field. And it was a church that felt called to make a difference in the community of Chicago as well as throughout the world. And if you hear me preach long enough, you'll often hear me make reference to Lakeview Presbyterian Church because it changed my life and eventually called me into the ministry. As I said 35 years ago, they were a More Light church, one of the first to openly welcome gay and lesbian people when there are not many churches opening their doors 35 years ago. The pastor himself was gay at a time when our denomination still censored and barred pastors due to their sexual orientation. Not all that long ago, Lakeview Church was a sanctuary church. As you may recall, the sanctuary movement was a religious and political campaign in the United States in the early 1980s to provide safe haven for Central American refugees fleeing civil conflict in their homeland. And our church housed refugees. They drove them to places where they needed to go and acted as a barrier and a place of safety between them and the authorities. And it showed me the necessity of embracing Howard Thurman's ideals, that you can also be a contemplative mystic as well as an activist at the same time. In fact, that's what we're all called to do and be. And so as we celebrate Black History Month, let us remember Howard Thurman and his vision, protest and pray, he would say. Protest and pray. There is no other way. Amen.